You're listening to Humanitarian Radio with your hosts, Tony St. Tone and Janie Beauclair.
Yes, welcome to Humanitarian Radio, and it is someone's birthday today.
There is a birthday in the house. I am Janie Beauclair, and I am here with Mr.
Tony St. Tone, and it's Janie's birthday.
It's true. It's a day celebrated by many around the world.
Yes. Yeah, so we're celebrating today.
I am grateful for Mom and Dad thinking of me on this day.
So we're celebrating this day with Janie and her birthday. So, Janie.
Random spankings?
Yes. What's it been like the past 25 years?
Oh, is this is your life? Are you going to have like my kindergarten teacher roll in?
Does this voice sound familiar? Yeah. No surprise guests in the studio today.
No surprise guests.
But we are off for an adventure, so we're not going to, can't give away all the surprises.
It's true.
Do you know, last year, what happened on your birthday last year?
Somebody I thought was going to have a heart attack on the beach. His heart was pounding so hard. I said, "Oh my, honey, are you okay?"
And what was the answer?
"Will you marry me?"
You asked someone to marry you?
I did. It's true.
Yes. Janie got a proposal last year on
she
her
did.
Birthday.
Yes,
so
it was fab.
It was, she wasn't expecting it. Let's put it that way. It was quite the surprise.
It was. Loved yes. it. Today, all I'm getting is older.
Hey. You have no idea yet what you got today.
No, it's true. It's true.
Well, still a surprise.
Thank you for all the birthday wishes and everybody who reached out to me today. I appreciate that very much. I want to tell you something that's really cool going on in celebration of my birthday.
Yeah, let's talk about your birthday and celebrations.
Across the country. Across the country. Across the world. In New Zealand. For the very first time, there is the Cosmic Forest Festival. It's literally going on today. So if you're not there, think about it for next year. Listen to this. Welcome to the Cosmic Forest Festival, an experience of unity and freedom, a gathering of love and awareness, and a journey through the heights and depths of music. Integrate nature's energy with the vibrance of your own body. Feel the beat of the music synchronizing with the beating of your heart. Feel the energy flow outside toward the colorful people around you and inside to the innermost sense of your well-being. Get lost in an ecstatic dance. Find yourself in the depths of sound. Let loose, dance without judgment, feel without filters, and love without boundaries. Now, doesn't that sound like something you want to go to?
That sounds cool. And this is in New Zealand, huh?
This is in New Zealand, yep, called the Cosmic Forest. And basically they say, please don't bring any meat, no animals. They'd prefer you to not do that for this festival.
So it's a vegetarian festival.
Well, it's Be Kind to Nature festival. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, how cool, though. That sounded like a lot of fun. I thought maybe we'd hop on a plane this afternoon and
For all you know, we could be doing that. You don't know. You don't know what we have in store.
It's true. This is true.
You know, I know of a woman who once took this guy out for Chinese food or Japanese food and then said, by the way, you're getting on a plane. And 2 hours later, I was on a plane. And that person was you. And I was a person getting on a plane.
And
so,
that wasn't very long ago.
And that was like a month ago that you secretly threw me on a plane. So
wasn't
you have no
fun?
Idea what's going to happen.
Wasn't that a good time, though?
Oh, it was a great time. I loved going out there. I had a great time with my family. But I just wish I was better prepared
as prepared as you needed to be.
Yeah.
Truly. Yep.
No, that's true. It's like, by the way, you're getting on a red eye from L.A. to Connecticut. Go.
In an hour.
Fly all night.
I
think your famous last words were, oh, you'll be able to sleep on the plane.
I think I did say that.
And I went, not. And sure enough, I did not. But that's okay. I still had a great time flying out there. And it was definitely quite the surprise. So
cool, yeah.
Paybacks are coming.
No, none necessary.
No, they're plus paybacks.
Have you heard about CrowdRise? You ever heard of that?
No.
I always try to find some cool fundraising things for whatever you're raising money for.
Okay.
And people on here raise money for college for their children, to start up their own businesses, for illnesses, for families and friends that just need, you know, lost their house or whatever, whatever. So I was checking this site out, crowdrise.com, and I looked at celebrity fundraisers, and it says sort of famous people fundraisers. Mm. So it's sort of famous people who one of them they consider Jimmy Kimmel sort of famous, which is hysterical.
Bret Michaels, who is famous. There's a bunch of people here that some I don't recognize and some I do recognize.
So I just clicked on Jimmy Kimmel to see what did he raise funds for. And it was a Foxfire Challenge, Comfort for the Children. He raised more than $121,000 on this website in fundraisers, and it scrolls everybody's name that gave money, and it's from $10, $5, $35, $10,000, $1,000, $300. It's every amount and the person's name, which is kind of cool. So I was thinking, if you were doing a fundraiser, you could literally reach out to these people because they obviously use the site to do their fundraisers and say, hey, would you stand up for me in this fundraiser and use your face and help me out? I say that because Jonathan Hill, I'm sure you guys know him, he raised $53,000 recently for cancer for somebody that was a complete stranger to him. So see that? Always looking for an angle.
Well, you know, I'm looking at one right now. This is Joey Mack. If you guys remember New Kids on the Block, he was the youngest kid of New Kids on the Block. And his mom suffers from Alzheimer's disease. He wrote that she loved to walk everywhere, never had a driver's license, always walked around Boston. And so he went to raise $26,000 for his mom, and he overshot it by 154%, ended up raising $40,000. And, you know, people are donating $10, $20, $100. Yeah. But, you know, the fact that you can get a celebrity to step up and almost double what you're trying to raise is amazing because they have that type of reach, you know?
Yeah.
So this is really interesting because crowdfunding has happened for the past couple of years that have been getting more popular. But once celebrities get involved, it's really amazing how these guys can raise money for their own movies and for their own projects, but now they can actually raise money for their own organizations that they want to take part in. So I think it's really great.
See, in this on this site, I'm reading Seth Rogen. I'm sure you know him. He's been in movies for a number of years. It says that Mozilla Foxfire is donating $50,000 to the charity on this site that raises the most money. He's currently raised $36,000 for a particular Alzheimer's Association. But isn't that cool? So apparently there's some type of a time-sensitive fundraiser on here, and whoever raises the most money gets a $50,000 prize from Foxfire. Looking at some of the others, I mean, just everyday normal people, somebody raised $980 so far out of his $2,000 he's trying to get. Somebody else raised $100, trying to get $300. So it's not like it has to be some massive something. I do also want to direct you to Mike Precise fundraiser that we have on the GoFundMe campaign, and you can find that on humanitarianradio.com.
It's right on the front page.
Mike is our very good friend, and he is suffering from a rare eye disease and losing his vision rapidly. He's a 28-year-old gentleman, and we would love, love, love nothing more than to get this guy his sight back.
Now, what I found real quick, what I found is that my brother has the same eye disease that Mike has. Mike has three different types of eye diseases, and his are very progressing forward. Actually, I found out that my cousin Carlo also has the same eye disease as my brother, but both of them, their eye disease stopped. Like, it stopped moving forward. It stopped progressing forward. But I found out, helping Mike, that my brother and my cousin Carlo both have the same eye disease. Mike, though, is in a different situation where we had him on the radio not too long ago, and he was telling us that when he wakes up in the morning and he opens his eyes, he sees six or seven images of the same thing. So it's like looking through a kaleidoscope almost.
Yeah.
And it's very painful. He says his eyes hurt. He has headaches all the time. So
quite frankly, he's just too young to be going through something like this and having, you know, no support that can help him get the surgeries he needs. We currently only need about $3,000 to get this guy's eyes fixed in level number one. So if you could possibly even donate $5 a person would be so awesome. We could get there before you know it, and get his disease stopped. And after that, it's just maintenance and getting the other extra things cleared up. But imagine if you could help to restore a 28-year-old gentleman's sight for life. What a gift you'd be giving.
I was going to say, it's a great gift to give. And this is something that we've been working on now for the past couple of months. And there's a lot of you out there who have donated, and we really, really appreciate what you've done. And we are actually currently putting together a show to help promote this or help get people aware of the cause that we're backing. And, you know, through our radio show and through our efforts and our music, we're trying to help this guy out. So if there's any way that you can help out, I've actually had some aunts and uncles of mine donate, and they've contacted me, and we've been able to put in $20, $30, $40 here and there. So I really appreciate everyone who's helped out.
Yeah, and it'd be a great birthday gift for me if I could say, hey, Mike, we got $2,500. You can go for your exam and get level one taken.
Wow.
What a great gift that would be, people. Okay, yeah. Help a sister out. Just $5, humanitarianradio.com. Go fund me for Mike Precise.
Check it out. So what else do we have going on? Because one of the things that we're going to have today is my sister's going to be on the air.
How much fun is that, having your sister on the radio?
I've been asking her for months, and so today I just snagged her on the phone. Ambushed her. She had no idea. And you'll get to hear that radio interview in a little bit, but she'll be talking about what she does for work.
Which is something really cool, and I'm really happy that she's sharing that with us. I was going to tell you about a little something else, because I found something else pretty cool.
Sure.
Angel Bins Fundraising.
Okay.
A bin, like a recycle bin kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Only they're a little bit bigger. They stick them out for you and you fill them up. So what do? For a fundraiser, like particularly I'm thinking this at a middle school or elementary school would be crazy popular. They'll bring a bin out to the school, say, or your church or whatever, and you collect old shoes, old clothing. Just like you would bring to Goodwill, that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And by the pound, however many pounds you collect, they pay you for.
Okay.
So each fundraiser you do, and you can do multiple throughout the year, but each one that you do, you can make $5,000. You can have a maximum of poundage that gets you $5,000.
That's amazing.
And what do they do with all the clothing? Two things. They recycle what is trash, if you will, into rags, and they get reused at places like oil centers and, wherever you need rags.
Oil centers and
such. You know what I mean?
Such.
Well, it said that in there, but I couldn't remember the other ones that it said.
That's okay. So they get transferred into rags, and I know
and
they also
other stuff,
send other...
Yeah, they send out to other countries, third world countries, mm-hmm. Whatever is used clothing. And so they're making the best out of what you're donating. What a win-win situation that is.
Well, it's a great way to recycle and to raise money for a cause.
And it is said that the recycling plants claim that only 15% of clothing ever gets recycled. It usually gets thrown away.
Really?
Yeah, which is really interesting. 15%, that's not very much.
No, that's not very much at all. But that's something, you know, and here's the thing. I know there's a lot of...
though? I mean, growing kids, you're moving through clothes regularly. And if you've got four kids and they've all worn the same pair of jeans, it's time to move them along.
Yeah, and you know, and that's why we always talk about going to the Salvation Army,
yeah,
which still creates jobs and helps people out. And this, the Angel Bin does the same thing where someone has to sort through those clothes. So there's money generated there to help people have work. But also it's a great cause for what it's doing out there. I think it's another win-win situation, which we always try to talk about here at the... at Humanitarian Radio.
Did you know by chance that Abraham Lincoln hosted a shoe drive back in the day and he raised $2,981?
Abraham Lincoln did.
He did. He did a shoe drive raising shoes for children.
Really?
What a dude. I love it.
I did not know that.
Well, you know, we're full of information here on Humanitarian Radio.
This is trivia information that you can maybe... I don't know what you can use that useless information about. week when we were in Mount Shasta, we introduced a new line, clothing line.
Yeah.
And what it's called Spirit of Music. It's a logo that I came up with, which is a G clef, which is a symbol
music
in
symbol.
Using mm-hmm. in music. And I added angel wings and a head to it. And it's this logo that I came up with a number of years back. And I've been working on it for a while, and I came up with all these different phrases, either Spirit of Music, Rock Your Soul, Music mm-hmm. for Life.
You played with it for quite some time.
Some time. And the first one we came up with for Mount Shasta, the event that we did, was the universal language music. And so yeah. we put this T-shirt out, and we're real excited about it because this is the first shirt in a number of in a series of shirts that we're going to be doing, mm-hmm. and it is now available online. But Yay. There's also something else special about these shirts. So
there is something special. You know, we learned a while back about how stones can heal and the power that stones have on the human body. And this is a scientific thing. This isn't like a guru, you know, voodoo, whatever, whatever, something
guru
craziness.
Guru voodoo thing.
Yeah, this is actually, you know, proven.
Yeah.
So for those of you who need proof, check the internet. It's mm-hmm. all over the internet.
Yes.
So anyway, we infuse these shirts with a gemstone called citrine. So if you haven't seen citrine before, I actually picked it because of its properties. But it's a very pretty yellow, almost a clear yellow tint. And it also goes into a little bit of rust. But listen to what this stone does for you. They call it the stone of the mind. Ancient cultures believe that placing a citrine on the forehead of an elder would increase his psychic powers. Woohoo! But actually, citrine's known as the lucky merchant stone. So if you're in any type of sales, they say wear citrine beads around your neck. It will help you to bring in the cash. They also say put a bowl of citrine beads next to your cash register and see what happens.
Interesting.
So I thought that was really cool. They say that it's very resembles a topaz. So a lot of people know what a topaz is. One of the healers on this website that I'm looking at says he used it to help people increase their self-esteem, protect themselves from negative energy or from someone else's abuse, open the mind to new thoughts, and promote clarity of thought. And so we had that infused into the property of our T-shirt.
Yeah.
So that when you wear this shirt, and these shirts are pre-shrunk and pre-washed and all that fun stuff. Mm-hmm. So when you wear the shirt, your body is going to be energized by the property of citrine.
Very cool.
Very cool.
And I know that one of the things that I found really interesting is while we were in Mount Shasta, you were selling different types of jewelry that had the stones that we have
on all the clothing. Yes.
Infused these clothing with.
We are coming out with a Spirit of Music jewelry line.
Yes.
And you're going to see pictures of that very soon on the website also. It's an exciting time for us because we've been working on this property line for about 2 solid years now.
Mm-hmm.
And we've come up with all our designs to launch over the next year, and it's very, very exciting.
Yeah. And I hope to have it out, the piece of jewelry, I hope to have that out before Christmas.
Right, right.
But, you know, these other shirts and stuff,
they're ready now.
They are ready now. So I know they already started taking orders online through Facebook. So
now, you played the Cranky Pants song recently, the last show or the show before or something like that.
Yeah.
Which we performed at Mount Shasta. And you also just came out with a Cranky Pants shirt, I noticed, the other day.
Yes. Yes. It's,
do tell.
It's a little character I came up with named CP.
CP.
Cranky Pants, CP.
Better change CP. Want to hang with me.
Yep. CP, you better change them jeans if you want to hang with me, is one of the lyrics. So I came up with this little character. Someone had mentioned, you know, you should have a Cranky Pants shirt.
Yep.
Because of the song. And I had already thought that, but then I went a little further and created a little character.
Yeah, it's so awesome. It's cute as can be. So
that's also available
find?
Online.
What line would that be?
So if you go to Facebook and you hit /, and you hit Saint Tone, you could see both shirts online there. And also you can go to the website. If you go to www.sainttone.com, they'll be up there also.
SAINTTONE.com.
That is correct.
So I wanted to give a quick shout out to Betty and Bill Cacciatore and their son Catch.
We had an amazing time over there recently. They invited us for a fabulous Italian dinner. Tony and Dave performed acoustically in the living room for them. We had just a fantastic evening, and I just wanted to give a shout out to those guys and let them know how much we enjoyed them.
Yeah, they're very big supporters of what we are doing with the music and the positive message that we're putting out. So
yeah, and
we're really excited that they're helping us spread the news.
The news and make a movement happen where people are listening to positive music, music that makes you feel good but also teaches you how to get through your life.
Mm-hmm. So we are going to be right back after a couple of commercial breaks, and we're going to be back with my sister, Maria DeLucia.
So listen up. If you're on the market for a graphic designer, you know, someone who can create logos, websites, etc., along with radio ads and video, well, there's no need to look any further than ST Productions. It's your one-stop shop for all your graphic, audio, and video needs. ST Productions will get it done while saving you money and having fun. So keep them in mind, ST Productions, an audio, video, graphic design service. Positive affirmations wrapped in pop rock songs.
Give me that best case scenario.
It's motivational musician Saint Tone. Check out his latest live show, The Rise Up Experience, at www.sainttone.com.
We can always hug it out.
Pick up his latest CD, Outside the Box, available on iTunes.
We choose to.
For music with a positive message, check out sainttone.com.
So we are back, and I am here introducing my sister, Maria Livornia DeLucia. She is a nurse and also just got qualified as a higher-ranking nurse. I'm going to let her describe exactly what qualifications she got certified.
Hi, Maria.
So, Maria, welcome to the show.
Hi, Tony. Hi, Janie. How are you guys?
Awesome. It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood.
You know, you've been doing this for a real long time. I know that because I've been playing guitar for 30 years, and you were studying to be a nurse while I would play guitars and write songs when I first started, and you would scream at me.
Scream at you to leave the house because you were too loud and I needed to study.
Yes. How did you do that with him? Did he even
listen to
you? I
used to go to the library because my family didn't support me. They supported Tony playing music.
Oh, brother.
I don't know about that one. It worked. The jury's still out on that.
It worked.
But anyway, we're here to talk about some of the things that you are currently doing or that you have been doing. Obviously, your job has really evolved over the years, and I know that I hear all these little stories about how you translate and how you help all these refugees that come in that don't speak English and how you go the extra mile. So I think it's something that our listeners would really like to know about.
Okay, so I've been a nurse for 30 years. In the last 10 years, I've been working at Yale New Haven as an outpatient pediatric nurse, and I usually tell people that it's like working in a doctor's office that's a little more chaotic because we see about 100 kids a day. And the beauty thing is, in the last 8 years, I've been the nurse who helps all the new arrivals that come from other countries. So we are the designation hospital for all the new arrivals that come through the New Haven area from all over the world. And we partner with an organization called IRIS, which helps to transition immigrants and refugees from other countries. It's a non-denominational group that supports all these people coming through. So I've seen people from Africa, the Middle East, Cuba, South America, primarily now from the Middle East. They've been threatened because a lot of these families that are coming over now have had dads who were helping the military with translation. So their families are now targeted because they were helping the Americans. So it's a great job. It's only one piece of what I do, but it's the most rewarding.
Wow. Okay. So now, just so everyone knows, you're in New Haven, Connecticut, because a lot of people might not know that. But now, when you say these families are threatened, it's because they've helped the U.S. military? How does that, like, you're saying you're helping families out that their father or
their... Right. So, a lot of the families that have come within the last year are coming from Afghanistan and Iraq. So, in talking to them, a lot of the dads that are coming through are speaking English, and their families have been targeted because they were helping the military translate. They were translators for the military, and now they have been targeted. So that's how they're getting asylum to come to the United States.
Gotcha. So then how did you end up, like, how did you end up being one of the persons that ended up,
getting in this position? Because this position isn't something that's, like, you sign up for.
Actually, I volunteered, and I don't know if your listeners know that we're first generation Italian and our parents immigrated here from Italy back in the 60s. So I actually volunteered to do this because I thought it would be really great to help other people that are coming to this country. Because although Tony may have mentioned to his listeners, you know, we were born in this country, but our parents spoke to us in Italian. So I had the misfortune or fortune to go to kindergarten and not speak English, even though I was born here. So I can totally relate to these families coming over and feeling like they're in a, you know, they're on Mars. They can't understand a word you're saying, and they're scared, and they feel uncomfortable. So I just kind of felt that was my calling to help them, because how who else could better understand what they're feeling than someone who's been in their shoes?
Exactly. So, and even though you were in their shoes 30 years, 40 years, 50 years ago, it doesn't matter. The whole point is that...
Oh, gosh, you totally remember going to kindergarten and crying because, you know...
You can't understand.
Where are you leaving me?
Yeah. Now, it's really interesting, too, because a lot of times it seems like you sort of get stuck with it because you're the one who can empathize with these people, where everyone else is like, I don't want to deal with that, or I don't know how to deal with that. Is that what you get a lot?
And I think what I like to do with them, and I think, I mean, I don't know. First of all, some of my colleagues don't want to work with the new arrivals because it's a little more challenging because of language barrier and such. Where I try to explain to them, like, look at me, you know, I show them a map of the United of the world when they first come in. And I like to have them tell me where they're from. And then I like to show them where they are now in, you know, the United States and where we are in New Haven. And I always tell the new arrivals, like, you know, the United States is such a wonderful place to live because, you know, although we come from all different parts of the world, we're all Americans. So I show them where my family's from, and I tell them, you know, my family's from Italy, and I didn't speak English either, and it's going to be hard. Your kids are actually going to be the ones helping you learn because the kids, as you might know, you know, kids adapt a lot quicker than the adults do. And I try to offer them some hope because, you know, they are scared and afraid. And I think they really relate to the fact, like, wow, you didn't speak English either, and you learned. And, you know, and we're trying to be very welcoming. A lot of these people are coming through with a lot of stress from their own countries where they're discriminated against for their beliefs and whatnot.
So you have people coming in from all around the world speaking all different types of languages. So you have a translator there in the office, is that correct?
In the ideal world, I have an in-person translator, and that's great when it's possible. But like for some of the families that come from Africa that speak these really different kind of dialects, we have to use a phone interpreter. And so we use it with the phone, and it's, you know, taking the time to explain everything and then making sure they really understand. And it's really amazing when you meet people that are from such diverse cultures. Like one family that I had a few months back, I really thought they weren't understanding me, and I kept saying to the interpreter, do they understand? I later found out this family that immigrated here were goat farmers in Africa. So can you imagine what they were going through? They were living in rural Africa, and now they're in New Haven, Connecticut, and trying to use mass transit and take buses. And they were so nervous about how they were going to take the bus home.
Now, how did they end up? How did they end up here in the first place? If they're goat farmers from Africa, and next thing you know, they're at Yale New Haven Hospital. How does that work?
Yeah, that one I'm not so clear as to how that family got access to come here. But I know that they're all screened, and it's a very long process. They wait 2 to 3 years to be able to come over. The families that are coming from the Middle East are being processed a lot quicker because they're families are being threatened. And honestly, I don't know how this one family, but it was so crazy because they've been here a week already, 2 weeks already, and they were really scared about how they were going to take the bus home. And so I did have to call one of the representatives and say, you really need to come and take the bus with them because mm-hmm. they don't know where they're going. But,
right.
But you know what's really great about it? I'm assigned to this particular clinic. I work with the same group of doctors, and what's nice is I've got to see them evolve. So the best feeling was one family that I'd seen at the very beginning. Their son came back, and he was coming to get his PPD, which is a test that we do to make sure that they don't have tuberculosis, right. because he was going to college. He was going into engineering at the University of New Haven. So, like, what better story than that?
Yeah, right?
You know, so, and I give them a lot of credit. Like, they come here with such a desire to succeed and be a part of the community, and, you know, they're, even though we're so different than them, they're embracing our language. You know, they're so proud. Like, when they come in and I say, oh, do you need an interpreter? I'm like, oh, no, I'm learning English. And
cool. So
it's a good feeling.
So you see these guys over and over again? You don't just see them, like, one time and you're the welcome committee, basically?
No, I actually see them I see them 2 days before they see the doctor, and I get to spend a lot of time with them and get a history. Then the doctor sees them. Then I see them a month later, 2 months later with the doctor. So I'm seeing them like every few months because I'm giving them catch-up vaccines.
It's such a blessing for them to have you as their welcome girl. I got to tell you, they are so blessed to walk into that situation and have you be the greeter.
Well, let me tell you, I get a lot out of it. You know, and it's funny because I think I shared this with Tony one time. This one family, they have smaller, older daughters, and he was a single dad. And then he came in with his brand new baby. He had met a woman here, and they had a new family. And I didn't know he was here with his family, and he gave me this big hug. And he really warmed my heart because he said, you know, people ask me, who's my doctor? And I say, Maria's my doctor. And I think that was his compliment because
cool.
I give them my number. And I'm like, you know, if you have a problem, call me. Because I know it's hard when you speak the language,
girlfriend?
You try to network with them. So you try. I also work with a really great group of doctors who are really committed to helping these new families succeed and integrate. And our interpreters that work at the hospital are really good.
That's awesome.
We have one interpreter who speaks Arabic who's really invested as well. So. It's a group effort, you know, and and we do like to do the extra because they appreciate it so much, so it makes you want to go.
And I would imagine that places like the clinics and the places that you guys work through probably could use volunteers from time to time. I'm saying that because a lot of people that listen to our show, they want to get involved, but they don't know exactly how to get involved in helping things like this. So do you have any suggestion as to how someone that isn't a licensed or certified person could still get involved and help you guys out?
As an interpreter or as anything?
As anything.
As anything. Okay.
Yeah, so as an interpreter, they really have to be a licensed interpreter to do the translating.
Mm-hmm.
But as a volunteer, they can go to any of their community hospitals and they have, you know, volunteer groups. I know because we are such a big hospital, we have volunteers in all areas. So you can actually go to the volunteer office and tell them, you know, this is what I like doing. This is what my background is. Do you have a place for me? And I'm sure they'll put them to good use. I know they're always looking for volunteers to help because these families need help, like I said, to learn how to use public transportation, to learn how to get to the laundromat, how to get to a grocery store.
Right.
And they do rely on a lot of volunteers.
And those are easy things for you to do, you know? I mean, if you have an extra hour in your day, you could literally help someone figure out how to take a bus. There's so many of those types of things that we take for granted because we all know how to do this stuff so easily. But think about us, you know, if you've ever traveled, think about going into a foreign country where you don't speak their language and imagine how you would feel trying to figure out how to get from point A to point B.
Well, we've experienced that.
Exactly. We have.
I know I have going to
many countries,
just getting on a train and you get on this train and you have no idea where it's going. You think it's going in a certain direction.
You hope it's going where you think it's going.
I remember being lost in France and being lost in a number of places just trying to get someplace. I remember being lost in Italy and I speak the language. And I couldn't find out where Pompeii was. I was looking for the ruins, and they kept saying, you're in Pompeii. And I'm like, No, I want, and I realized I had to say the Pompeii
ruins. You probably
ruins.
Were in Pompeii, but you wanted to find
the ruins.
There is a studio.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So, I mean, so, these are things that are that you think are so common, but again, if you go back to these sheep herders from Africa, yeah. and now all of a sudden you're putting them in downtown New Haven, Connecticut,
yikes.
It's a totally different lifestyle. Obviously, it's
and
just skyscrapers.
It doesn't take a lot of your time to be able to help someone out either. Like I was saying before, you could, you don't have to have, like, I need an 8-hour open day in order to go help people. No, you can just have
right.
an hour or 2 hours available, and that would change a person's life.
Right.
The name of the organization that you work for is IRIS. So tell everyone what IRIS stands for.
So IRIS is an organization located in New Haven, and it stands for Integrated Refugee and Immigrant Services. So it's a non-denominational organization that takes funds from donations and churches, and they sponsor families that are coming over, and they provide them with housing and help them get settled into the community, get into schools, and provide support for the first 6 months that they're here, and also help them find jobs.
And do you know, like, I mean, do you know how they got chosen, or how they apply for IRIS, or you know, you just get the end result from it, saying, hey, this family's chosen from Africa, this family's from wherever.
So IRIS, we are their clinic of choice. So anybody that comes through IRIS is automatically comes to our clinic for their medical care. And as far as how the refugees are chosen. A lot of them are seeking political asylum. They're being threatened. It's like most recently, most of them are being threatened because of the war. They were Arabic families who were, the fathers were translating for the American government, and now they're being threatened. Or the ones that come from Africa, they're just, they're asking for asylum. And I think, you know, there's a percentage of people that can come over. And they actually don't even know where they're going when they ask for this asylum, like, because I do ask them, like, how did you pick New Haven? Do you have a family member here or a friend? And most of them don't. And they basically, it could be a lottery, and they're chosen to come to the United States, and they just go wherever they're told. So right now we're getting a lot from the Middle East and Africa, but I know that there are other countries that are being settled in other parts of the country. So they try to keep, like, immigrants together so that they can have support within their own, like, newly formed communities. So
right. So it's almost, so
at least
I don't
have all the details and how they get chosen.
No, I know, I get that. So at least though they get to find other groups of Africans or other groups of people from Iraq. Almost very similar to the way the immigrants came over from Italy. And they settled with all
right.
the Italians, and the Irish settled with the Irish. So at least you have some kind of community to feel like you can go through
right.
it together, getting through it.
And I'm sure IRIS is always looking for more people to help volunteer.
IRIS are always looking for anybody to do anything for them, like to help with rides, to help with just learning how to use different items. Like, you know, think about, I'm thinking again, the family that came from that very rural part, you know, do they
yeah.
even know how to use a stove? Like, do they know how to,
right.
you know,
turn on
depending on where they're from. Right.
Now, do they ever ask you for those types of things, saying, Maria, obviously you're here to help us with vaccinations and all that, but we need help getting on a bus, or we need help figuring out how to find a grocery store, or any of that. You know, obviously someone sets them up with an apartment, right? So someone sets them up with
yeah,
housing.
Yeah, it's really cool. They get set up with housing. The apartments are fully furnished. I honestly still can't get over how they do it, but they do. So they usually will tell me what their issues are, and then I refer them back to the caseworker that's working with them in the organization. But for the most part, the organization that sponsors them is really good about, you know, making sure they know what they're doing. That's why with the African family, I was really surprised that they didn't know how to take the bus, because within 2 weeks, they usually know how to take the bus. But then when I found out the backstory that they were goat farmers, I'm thinking, great, they probably don't even know how to read for their own language, let alone English. You know,
yeah.
So then it made a lot more sense. Because I really, even with the interpreter, I think I was trying to explain to him that, you know, I saw him on a Wednesday, they needed to come on Friday, and he couldn't understand the concept of Friday, and he kept saying tomorrow with the interpreter. And I had to go and get a calendar and show him.
Yeah.
You know,
challenging.
Like the day after,
that's challenging conversation.
like the day after tomorrow. Well, it's harder when you don't have that live person and you're going over the phone, because then you have to really rely on the translator.
Yeah.
Now you... And that's why I kept saying to the translator, like, is he understanding me? Because I don't think he is. But
now, for the number of years you've been doing this, obviously there have been people that have blended into society here in America, and have any of them come back to visit you, or have any of them kept in touch with you over the years?
No, because they all come back. And it's funny because my kids and my brother can attest to this. You know, they get a little upset with me because I do stay there a little bit longer than I should sometimes. But this few months ago, we were at a local mall, and I ran into one of my families, and it helped my daughter to understand where I'm coming from, because the mom can learn a little bit of English, comes over and gives me a hug, and the kids were there, and it was really kind of cute, because the six-year-old, who was a three-year-old when I met her, translated for the mom, and was hugging my daughter, hugging me, and so my daughter Anna came away with it going, okay, Mom, now I get it.
Wow.
You know, like, I get it.
I was wondering about that. I was going to ask you if your giving heart rubs off on the kids because they're raised around that. Or is that a behavior we're born with or we're not? You know what I mean?
Yeah. You do have to be careful with the different cultures, like how they are. But, you know, for the most part, people are very warm. You know, and, you know, Janie, I'm a huggy person. So.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
You know, we're huggy people. We, you know, I don't know, it's just in our nature. And
well, I wondered because, you know, I have one child and he's always seen me doing this stuff throughout the years, doing fundraisers and helping people out and all that kind of thing. And he's like that also, but I never knew if that was something that was just in him or I taught him or he viewed or how that worked. That's why I wondered if it works that way with your two kids.
Oh, okay. I don't know. They think that I'm almost too open. It kind of annoys them because, like, I talk to everybody. And, you know, that's just, again, that's who I am. And I think they're a little more reserved than I am.
Yeah.
But they get annoyed. Like, you know, you're waiting in line to pay, and I'll start talking to the people around me. And
yeah, that's me, you know, totally.
They're like, Ma, really? Come on. Like, you have to talk to everybody? You have to talk to everybody? And I'm like, well, why not? We're standing here anyway.
Yeah.
And plus, that's part of your job. So you're very comfortable with talking to people.
Sure, sure, sure.
Yeah.
What do you think is the biggest highlight of what you do for other people? As in, like, the feeling that it gives you when you're doing great things and you see the change in people. What do you think is the biggest bang for your buck you're getting out of doing this for other people?
Oh, that it made a difference.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't matter how much you're getting paid. And it's funny because, like, I went into nursing when nursing wasn't getting paid a whole lot.
Yeah,
I know
wasn't
a lot of
popular.
People go into nursing now because, you know, the salaries are there now. But when I started out, that wasn't the case. And I think what you take away from it is the fact that you helped somebody and that, you know, you were there in a critical time. And, you know, this is the other thing, too. You know, you can make a difference in anything. You don't have to be a nurse and help people. You can just smile at someone. Or, you know, I had a situation in my personal life where I invited a friend to take a class with me, and I didn't realize that she was going through a difficult time because she was very private about her, you know, her stresses. Mm-hmm. And later she told me how important it was for her, that she looked forward to our weekly class because it was her outlet. And
wow.
I had just invited her participate in adult education class with me, and I didn't realize until years later when she told me. She was like, you know, you really saved me when you asked me to go to that class with you. It gave me something to look forward to. Again, you know, it made me feel better. So, you know,
you don't know
what another person is going through, and even a little smile can make a big difference.
I said that when we were closing our show last week. I said, smile at somebody that you just pass on the sidewalk, you know, because I've heard the healing side of smiling. I was watching, maybe Dr. Phil or one of those shows. And this guy was saying how
this person just passed me on the sidewalk and smiled at me, and it changed my entire day because I was having a horrible day. And the guy goes, I looked back to see why that person would have been smiling at me, and there was no reason for it. So it completely shifted where that guy was going. And so the story on whatever medical show it was how the endorphins react to a smile and how you literally change the demeanor of the receiver by giving that smile.
Right. And so even if you're not a huggy person like us, you can give somebody a smile and still make them feel good. Because I know some people aren't comfortable with, you know, touch. And
I have to say, though, I know you probably have too, but I've been able to convert a lot of non-huggers into huggers.
Yes, you have. Yeah.
I give
hugs for selfish reasons. You know, you give a hug, you get a hug back.
That's right. Exactly.
You know? And they say you're supposed to get 9 hugs a day.
9 hugs a day?
Yeah, I don't know where I heard that, but I heard you're supposed to get 9 hugs a day.
Is that like 8 glasses of water?
Like 9 hugs a day. 8 glasses of water, 9 hugs.
I like the 9 hugs a day.
I think it's kind of sad that, you know, we're in a society where we're just so stressed out about personal space and that, you know, we're told we can't hug our kids and we can't, you know.
Yeah, you can't even touch them anymore.
Well, let me just tell you, the situations that I've been in with Janie, I've seen people, she grabs them and they sort of cringe. Because they're like, oh my God, this woman's grabbing me. And then they sort of relax and they're like, oh, okay, that wasn't that bad. Because she just grabs them. She's like, I'm coming in for a hug. Yeah. And they're like, what? What? And next thing you know, she just grabs
them. That's exactly what I say too. I say, I'm coming in. It's like, ready or not,
here
I
come. Coming in. I think, unfortunately, not everyone was raised in a family where hugs were abundant.
Right.
So they have to learn to be comfortable with that and see the goodness.
Now, are you allowed to hug the people that come into your facility or into the hospital?
I was never told I shouldn't.
So there you have it.
I mean, I don't hug them when I first meet them. I put my hand out, I shake their hands, but you know me. You know, by the second time, like, we're giving each other hugs.
Yeah, especially by the time they're leaving,
you know?
Totally.
And it's really funny because, like, people think, you know, they're from the Middle East or the Africa, you know, we're all very open.
Yeah.
And, you know, for the most part, I don't hug the men, I mean, I hug the women, but, you know, they appreciate what you do, and the kids... You know, I'm giving them injections, and I feel bad after, you know, and I always tell the interpreter, I'm really, you know, unfortunately I can't give them this medicine any other way, and this is how we have to do it, and,
you
know, I always give them a hug.
Yeah, hugs are good. You know, I'm happy to know that we have a 9-hug-a-day quota, Tony.
Yeah, you'll be able to hit that, no problem.
9-hug-a-day.
Yeah. I'm going to share that for years to come on this show.
You're like, probably number 7.
I don't know. I heard 9 hugs a day. I don't know where I heard it from. I don't know what research
I'm going
supports
with
it.
I'm trusting you as an authority.
My husband was never a hugger, and I converted him. I said I need to be hugged every morning and every night at least once.
See? That's a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
Who was it you had to convert?
My husband.
He went from hugging no one. Now he hugs his friends. Like, you know, we see friends. We get some.
Yeah. Isn't that awesome? It's a great thing to share, and it doesn't cost anything. Anybody could share that little treasure.
There you go. So maybe we'll call this the hug show afterwards.
It's the hug show.
Aww.
Brought to you by Hugs, not the band.
Huggies.
Well, yep. I know that I grabbed you on a whim to come and do this because...
You did.
I figured that was the only way he was going to get you to do it. Thank you for doing what you're doing. We really appreciate having people like you on this earth, my friend.
Well, thank you. It's my pleasure, though. I get to do it.
See, you get to do it. You get to share it on humanitarian radio. So.
That's how I get to see. It's a calling. It's something you just feel to do.
Totally.
All right. Well, thank you so much for getting me on the spot here.
You're very All welcome.
Right. Always a pleasure to show you off.
All right. Take care, guys.
All right.
Love you, honey.
So that, well, again, was my sister, Miss Maria Lavornia DeLucia. And every week what we like to do is we like to send a song out to our guests. And this week the song I chose is Shine My Light.
And what does Shine My Light mean, Mr. Tony St. Tone?
It's a song I wrote a number of years back, and it is the first track off of World Radio. And... Mm-hmm. It has to do with going out there and being the light that will help others move forward.
Say if you never did a fundraiser or you never actually gave someone a hand before and you were to be inspired by this very show and you decided that you were going to get out there and try to help someone out, whether in your neighborhood, at your job, wherever, you could be shining your light.
For the first time in years.
I like it.
There you go.
Play the song.
So here we go. This is Shine My Light by Saint Tone.
I'm here shining my light for the first time in years. Nobody's on the phone and you're sitting home alone. Party's outside and you feel you've been denied. So what to do? Relax your mind. Breathe in. I'm here shining my light for the first time in years, babe. I'm here shining my light. I'm here shining my light for the first time in years, babe. In your hair, living life without a care, you seek the truth. Loving every day, finding sunlight through the rain, you trust in you. I'll be there to help you follow through. I'll be there when darkness blinds the truth. I'll be there to help you realize we've all got a light to shine. So shine. I'm here shining my light for the first time in years, babe. I'm here shining my light. I'm here shining my light. First time in years. The first time in years. Years.
So once again, that was Shine My Light by Saint Tone. You could find that track at www.sainttone.com. Check it out. The lyrics are there also. Have a great week. We can't wait to see you next week. And we always have new guests coming on. And if you do know of someone similar to my sister who is out there that are doing
maybe
good things
sister.
For the world, let us know.
Reach out to www.humanitarianradio.com. Bye-bye.
I think that was Yahoo. I'm not sure if that's copywritten, but okay. Take care. Peace.
Humanitarian Radio, shouting out some good news for your soul.